Star jump sequence terminates, Captain.
Get the gravitational dampers online and open the blast shield.
Aye, sir.
Bring us in closer.
Aye, aye, sir. Moving us in on sublight drive.
Extreme magnification.
Aye, sir.
The center of the galaxy. And there's our black hole.
The experience of a lifetime, Captain.
Let me put this on audio. You should be able to hear the magnetic resonance.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. The edge of time and space, where the impossible can happen. Welcome to the event horizon.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening. Whatever is relevant for the part of the world you are in. Indeed, welcome to the Event Horizon, where the impossible happens. Join us each week at this time as we delve into the worlds of science fiction, fantasy, and science fact in all their forms. I am your host, Gene Turnbow.
And I am your other host, Susan Fox.
And with us today is a production team working on something called Gabriel and the Guardians. And this is a different kind of show. Usually we do a show about something that's finished and in the can, and here's the link, and you can click on it, and you can watch the whole show. But not this time. This time we're doing something, we're doing a show about something that's...
still in production, still in pre-production, and funding their effort to make a TV show out of it.
And this, yeah, this is not just a web series. This is going to be full-on television stuff. Welcome to the show. We've got David Cunningham, the executive producer and showrunner, Lisa Tucholsky, the assistant story editor, Jason Andrew Moody, the creator and the art director, and Al Moore, the executive producer and head of production. Welcome all four of you. Glad to have
Hello.
You with us.
Hello. Thanks for having
Great
us.
Great to be here.
Yeah.
So deep.
Okay, so I'm gonna address the elephant in the room. Are you guys gonna get in trouble with your church for this? Because it looks like you're applying anime to the Old Testament, and what the heck?
Yeah, I've already been kicked out. So no, I'm just kidding.
Oh, I hope not.
No, that's.
I mean, the last time we saw Gabriel on TV as a character, it was John Hamm, and it was Good Omens, which is not exactly orthodoxy, is it?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, so this is a very different view of Gabriel.
Yeah, we've actually worked pretty hard to honor the text that we call our source material, mm-hmm. Our inspiration. But I think what we've done is created a way to tell these stories and these themes and these narratives with some of the characters that are sort of, you know, almost mythic to some extent. You know, Gabriel and Michael, these are mythic characters. And
Absolutely
what we've done is we've kind of set it in a fantasy realm, right? Mm-hmm. So we're telling these stories, but it's set in a fantasy world. So it's not the real Gabriel, but it is an interpretation of Gabriel.
Well, and the legend of Gabriel and who he is and what he represents predate the Bible by probably 1,000 years anyway. So it really is legend. This is,
yeah.
So you're drawing from some very, very old stories.
Yeah. I mean, some of the Book of Enoch and some of the other Dead Sea Scrolls, you know, that are what the modern church would consider apocrypha, but actually some of those books are what the Second Temple Jews were reading and studying from, have some very interesting stories about Gabriel and the other guardian angels, and how they battled the Nephilim. And it's just some great biblical mythology that it's really fun to explore, you know?
Well, and those old legends are also intertwined with the legends of the Fae and elf kind.
Wow, that's a link I never would have said aloud.
I actually studied up on this a little bit, and the very
the unseen iconic figures of every culture, uh-huh. right?
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. Our, go ahead, David.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, we're also drawing from Mesopotamian, other Mesopotamian myths, Epic of Gilgamesh, and, mm-hmm. and, you know, like some really, you know, ancient texts from, you know, that part of the world, which, you know, like the Middle East, or you could say, you know, like that area of the world from, I don't know, you can say like from where like Egypt over to where modern day yeah. Iran is, mm-hmm. yep. you know, now. And
all that Near East.
Yeah. Kind of,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at all of it because, yeah, a lot of those ancient stories tell similar stories and similar characters. Yeah. And mm-hmm. it's really fascinating. And it kind of, you know, kind of makes you think like they almost have been telling these tales around campfires to each other, you know, and they, yeah. they got oh, written sure. down, you know, different tribes and things uh-huh. like that.
And passed oh, yeah. along from tribe to tribe as an oral tradition. And yeah. a lot of the characters that have similar pathways, all you can trace them back to a common story that's even older.
So YouTube yeah. is the campfire now.
I was actually just doing a study about what you just said. A lot of it was carried verbally. They didn't have books, they didn't have scrolls. A lot of people couldn't afford those things, so everything was just repeated and told as they had heard it, and it was passed down from generation to generation.
You know,
yeah, and one of the first forms of writing is cuneiform, right? And mm-hmm. so one of the first places that we have documentation of one of those shared cultural stories, mm-hmm. like a worldwide flood, mm-hmm. is found in Sumerian cuneiform tablets.
Right, Aramaic.
And it's awesome.
No, that's not Aramaic. I mean,
if you read it, it's like, this is very close to the Noahic tradition.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, one thing that I love thinking about as we're working on story and backstory and plot is we get to play with this idea of, like, this is a fantasy world and it has its own lore. And so one of the lore that we have is, like, this we call the Star of Paradem, but not every culture on Ara calls it the Star of Paradem. They mm-hmm. all have different myths and stories about what this star in the firmament is and how it came to be and what it represents and what it symbolizes. So it's cool to have all of these different cultures to draw from and then think, okay, what's the analog in our fantasy world? How do our fantasy cultures interact with each other, and how did their myths interact and change over time?
So how did you, what was your first entry into this world of mythology, because this is the stuff that J.R.R. Tolkien drew from.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it started with actually listening to a podcast. It was during COVID. And, you know, as a lot of us had, I had a lot of time on my hands. And I started listening to a podcast called The Bible Project, which goes, Professor Tim Mackey just goes very deep in Old Testament. And then some of the other Hebraic texts that come from around that, from that same time period. And he just goes very deep into Genesis and the lore of Genesis. And I was fascinated by it, just absolutely fascinated by it, and began to imagine a story that was more told through a modern lens, right? Told through this anime sort of action-packed lens, but with some very traditional fantasy and storytelling, techniques to it, and just began to imagine, could you tell these stories, these old ancient Hebrew, Sumerian, Mesopotamian tales and texts and stories, is there a way to stream these together and sort of homogenize them into an action-packed show that would pay homage to these stories, but uh-huh. also tell it in sort of a fresh way?
Yeah, well, the thing is that for me, it sounds like the original stories were all, as we were saying, they were campfire stories, you know, or told around the kitchen table or told to children at night, you know, before bed and this kind of thing. And every storyteller added a little of themselves. And they exactly. So they evolved and grew and proliferated and variegated. And there's so much of what makes us human interwoven with these stories. So
let's dive into the story. Who is Gabriel and what are the guardians guarding?
Yeah, so I do want to say that as in a microcosm of what you just said, I think that that's how this story has grown. It actually, the, like as we get into what the story actually is, it is a product of exactly what you just said. I had an idea, but then I met this guy named David, and he added to that idea. And he started telling a version of it that I started telling. We went back and forth. And then Al came in, and then Lisa came in. And now it is, even in the microcosm of us creating this story, it's sort of played out that same exact history of storytelling, yeah, which is very dynamic. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm just fascinated.
I'll let David and Lisa, since at this point they have kind of taken the story out of my hands and kind of run. So I'll let them sort of tell the story.
Okay.
Sure. Actually, Lisa, do you want to go for it or do you want me to?
You know, I'll take a swing. Why not? Cause I did just do this. I went to WonderCon, which is how I met Gene, right? So I was at WonderCon, I met Gene at a mixer, and I said, you know, you have a radio show, we have a TV show, we should get together and talk about that. So let me see if I can remember how I was describing it to people at WonderCon when I had, like, studied up on it.
I just saw the poster and I thought, oh, hot dang, this is good. You know, we've got to talk about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that poster got me a lot of mileage at WonderCon. It's a great poster.
It is.
And so... So here's what Gabriel and the Guardians is about. We have a celestial guardian named Gabriel, who we often describe as, what if Buddy the Elf was a superhero? Right? So you have this, like, happy-go-lucky Buddy the Elf. He's, like, part Buddy the Elf, and then part, if you watch Dragon Ball, he's part, like, Goku, like, very fierce fighter. And so he is the guardian of this celestial sort of different realm called Paradem. And one day a giant comes and steals a seed. And so he has to go down to the treacherous, dangerous world of Aura, brimming with chaos creatures. And he has to team up with a fierce giant hunter named Nock and a fantastic alchemist princess named Maya. And they become an unlikely trio that's traversing the dangerous wastelands, trying to retrieve the seed and save the world from the chaos creatures that inhabit it.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds like Saturday morning in the 70s, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of that. Yeah. It's really playing off of that classic hero's journey for Gabriel, which is, you know, Gabriel was, except it's in reverse, right? The classic hero's journey is an average everyday mortal is called to adventure and has to transcend into the spirit realm on a quest and learn what he needs to learn and then go back and save the world, right? And this, we've reversed it. Gabriel is actually already from the spirit realm. He's already from the spiritual place, and he has to leave his home and go to the mortal realm to help save the mortal realm. And so, you know, it's this fun reverse where he goes to this world that fish out of water, right? Mm-hmm. Where he's in,
sure,
he's this celestial being that's walking around on the world of people and, you know, mortals.
With all of the hilarity that ensues, because yes, he's not, you know, he has no idea that the mortals can't do the things that celestials do.
Hence the Buddy the Elf reference. Yeah, we just kind of had this moment when we were trying to crack Gabriel. We had really gotten Nock and Maya, these, like, they just had these great personalities, and we were like, mm-hmm, okay, Gabriel has to be equally as interesting. And then I forget who, I don't know if you remember, David, but someone mentioned, you know, what if it was kind of like Buddy the Elf, but as an action hero? And we were like, oh, that kind of rocks, you know?
So yeah, I think it was in the first writer's room, I think, that we were talking about that. We were trying to figure that out. And I landed on that, and it felt really right, and it works really well in the story. And it's just really fun. Gabriel's just a super fun character, and especially, like, yeah, to be the opposite kind of fish out of water, is that he's he's already, you know, super strong and super powerful in this mortal world and doesn't really understand it and doesn't really get things like darkness, or that you can't eat everything that looks edible because it might be poisonous, and, you know, like,
right.
Different things that, you know, that happens like that. Just, it's really fun. Yeah.
I think some of the other stuff too, right, is he still thinks he can do everything he could do on Aura, and he kind of quickly figures out he can't.
Well, yeah,
in Paradigm, not Aura.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He's not quite as strong as he is in his own realm, and that's, like, another mystery of why that's happening, and that's something we'll reveal in the show.
Yeah, we've got video running. You know, you're listening to this on radio, but we've got video running, and I'm looking at Lisa and her coffee cup that's the size of her head that she is.
And there's something wrong with that.
Yeah.
You've seen my coffee cups.
Yeah, coffee. I can't quite make it out.
Yeah. So my coffee mug says "Drink coffee because adulting is hard," but it's actually I have tea in here right now. It's my mug. Whenever I have to talk a lot, I'm like, I need something good for my throat, so let me make a giant, absurdly large mug of tea and just sip that.
Well,
the and interview.
I do the same thing. You know, I've got my can of
fizzy water.
Fizzy water.
I live on that stuff.
Yeah, it's
Kroger
just,
brand too. That's I think that's the best brand.
Yeah, I think. Something. Yeah, Kroger brand. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no sugar. I see it a mile away. I know exactly what I see that can.
I was going to say, you know
yes,
what's
welcome
funny
to
about
Beverage
that?
Talk on sci-fi.radio.
I was going to say, I travel to Europe a lot, and in Europe, they're always talking, you know, they always want, they say with or without gas, you know? So I thought, well, I better get used to this. So I started drinking seltzer water. I don't mind it. But then I got to Europe, I'm like, man, that is not the same as our seltzer water. It tastes completely different. It's
That's
horrible.
Interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, it's
like
the it's
in
about
Europe.
The you know, it's that it's the cultural differences, you know, that that make life interesting.
And it's the same cultural differences that Gabriel is running afoul of. Why see that? See that segue?
Yes, I planned
that.
That
was nice.
We need someone on our calls that just like you that keep us on track.
Yes. Exactly.
She's good. She's really good.
She is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So meanwhile back at the show, how many episodes are we looking at here to
and what are your plans for the production?
What are your plans for this?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, so the long-term plans, the big goal is 5 seasons, 13 half-hour episodes per season, so 65 episodes. That's like the big goal. Now, it is hard to get there with a TV show because TV shows cost a lot of money, and they take a long time to make. I mean, season one is going to take us at least 2 years, you know, to make. We started, you know, like last year, you say the writing process really started last year around May. We're coming up, we're almost to May right now. And we are planning on going into production on the first episode in June. So it takes a while. Pre-production, writing, you know, we've got Lisa actually was just working on our series Bible that's like up to like 108 pages now, which is all just backstory and lore and how did this world happen? How does the magic work? How does like, who are the characters? What are the cultures? What are their beliefs? Like all the foundational kind of stuff. And so we're still building that out.
The major ideas of the, you know, like just to give your audience an idea of like the world of Ara is extremely allegorical. Mm-hmm. You know, the world, you know, originally there was a first man and first woman, the first two mortals of Ara, and they were given a paradise to learn how to basically have dominion. They were given the ability to rule and reign over this paradise realm that was on Ara. The rest of Ara is a wasteland planet. It's completely unmade. It's uncreated, if you will. Mm-hmm. We call it the wild and waste of Ara. And the two mortals, the idea was that they would learn to cultivate and then begin to take out that paradise into the rest of Ara and plant trees that would then create the entire planet into a paradise. But unfortunately, they succumb to the chaos of dark chaos waters that they allow in. And so the paradise has to be taken. It actually is removed from Ara, and they're exiled. But they're left with these 12 seeds. They're not left abandoned. They're left with these 12 seeds to begin to try to create and cultivate from those 12 seeds. Unfortunately, in the story, as that goes on, as mortals do, they begin to you know, have agendas and different one, you know, one guy wants all the seeds for himself and another guy wants this, another guy wants, and so they become a sort of a fractured people. Mm-hmm. And from there, the next generation becomes more fractured and the next generation becomes more fractured until 1,000 years later, you just have
this
all these civilizations.
Society.
Yeah. Yeah. Just all these civilizations that are power hungry and backstabbing each other. And, you know,
Sounds like real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you have these civilizations that all develop around their individual trees, right? And they're all different. And then throughout the season or seasons, we'll be exploring those different areas of the world of Ara. It's a huge world. And in the first season, I think what we visit like three or four of the 12. So there's a lot to uncover. Again, these guys have all done a great job in creating this world, and it's vast.
Yeah, that's right, Al. Each one of those seeds end up growing over the 1,000 years into a giant celestial tree that that a civilization ends up building around. Yep. And so you've got these wildly different civilizations that each have their own kind of tree that is the source of life for their society.
It sounds like... and correct me if I get this wrong. Yggdrasil?
Yggdrasil.
Oh, yeah.
Yggdrasil, the tree at the end of the world. You know, but each culture has one.
Yeah, so...
And every branch of the tree of that tree is a different world and a different culture. Yeah, because the Vikings brought their their mythology to... No, they didn't.
Yeah, it's so that idea has if you'll forgive the pun, very deep roots.
Maha.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Yeah.
So
Yggdrasil is very much, you know, the idea of the world tree or the tree of life, the source of all life, right? You know, this is a common thread throughout history, and Yggdrasil's one iteration of it, right? Mm-hmm. And so we definitely have that. That's where all of the seeds come from, is from the tree eternal, which is in Par-Edem, which is where Gabriel's from. And so that's the seed that gets stolen at the beginning of the episode by a giant. The idea here is that this is essentially paramount to, a nuclear weapon, you know, on Ara. I mean, a new seed, everybody wants it because it represents so much power. And so the whole world is after this new seed that is on the map, right?
Oh, like the
and
Genesis device
trying to get it
from
get
Star
it back
Trek.
To the celestial realm.
You're like the Genesis device from Star Trek.
Yeah, I was going to actually say earlier when you were talking about that, I was like, if you know the Genesis device from Star Trek, yeah, that was the original plan, right? So that's what they were talking about planting these seeds and coming out from what is now Par-Edem and populating the entire planet. That, you know, again, it's the wild and waste of Ara. It was a wasteland just like in Star Trek, and it was designed and planned to be inhabited and become lush and become fruitful the entire world. But then, as the story unfolds,
and then things go sideways.
As they do.
I'm just curious, how much do you have budgeted to do your episodes? What does it take?
Oh, good
what does it take to do one?
quite a bit of pennies.
Yeah. So the budget for season one is approximately around $6.5 million. And it's an approximate budget because we do not have the entire budget just yet.
Yeah.
So we're hoping to go into, or we're planning at least to go into production in June on the first episode. And it is an expensive endeavor. And so one of the things that we're doing is we're trying to get this first episode out and as quickly as we can. And then we're working on getting the funds to get the entire season out. And then, of course, we want to go into, you know, all five seasons, which we've mapped out the arcs for all five seasons already. It's one thing that if you've watched the Lost series, it always very frustrated me. You know, I watched the whole thing and I was very frustrated because it just felt like the writers didn't know where things
were going. Plan your ending,
well,
right?
It was frequently discussed in social media that the title of the series Lost described the writers, not the people in it.
So y'all are looking for some angel investors. You'll excuse the pun.
We are. Yeah, we have been. Yeah, and we've raised just shy of $2 million. Half a million of that came from fans. So actually came from our fan base.
That's very impressive. Impressive.
And then the rest has come from independent investors.
Yeah.
Well, there is a webpage for investors, and we will put that in the article so people can reach
it. So when you go there, what you want to go to is there's actually a section called Pay It Forward where you can continue to still support the show.
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify that Pay It Forward is not investing. So that would, it would be supporting the show. That money would go directly to us helping to make the show. Right now, so we had the crowdfund back in October, but the crowdfund is no longer running. It only ran for just that 1 month. Right now, we don't have it open out to the general public for investing. So I just want to make that clear that we're not soliciting investors right now.
Yeah, we don't currently have plans to do another crowdfund. And yeah, and what I was going to say is hopefully within the next 30 days, we'll close another 200 to half a million.
So yeah, right now we're just talking to private investors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned, you know, the mythology around fae and fairies. As I was doing research and looking into like Mesopotamian, Sumerian, and even Persian Babylonian mythologies, I found that a lot of those Celtic things that we attribute to, you know, a Northern European mythology, which is what Lord of the Rings is, you know, typically kind of inspired by, man, they date all the way back. I mean, those the idea of a fairy goes all the way back to Sumerian and Persian mythology, which is very cool.
Yes, the idea of beings that live on a plane of existence that is perfected above our own, and the very idea of the sun being a spirit comes from. This is where the legend of elfinkind comes from.
And yeah, but when they come and mess with mankind, it doesn't go well for mankind usually.
Usually it never does.
Which is a consistent story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we get the Nephilim idea. The Nephilim idea comes from, it's the same story as the Anunnaki. It's the same story as the Egyptian gods. These beings from the stars come down and they muck around with mortals. And then what happens from that, the product is not great. You know, it's bad for people, you know?
Yeah, it's bad for everybody.
Zeus says, I'm going to do the thing. And everyone says, don't do the thing. And he does the thing. And it's Zeus, and it's Loki, and it's whoever.
And hilarity ensues.
Unless you're one of the mortals in his way, and then it doesn't go so well.
So part of the story, right, in our mythology is that Gabriel gets to Ara only to discover that there are these beings from the unseen realm that are posing as gods. And so the plot thickens, as it were, right? Uh-huh, he gets here and he finds that other beings like him are not doing their job. They've actually left their celestial stasis and they've come down and they're mucking around. And so now he has to get involved because he's good. You know, he's a good guy.
Right.
And so now he doesn't want to. What he finds is that these beings have developed a taste for human worship. They really like, or mortal worship. Mm-hmm. They want to subdue mankind. And Gabriel, he has the heart of a servant. He wants to help. That's it. And so once he realizes that these mortals are being subjugated and taken advantage of, he steps in.
Yeah, and that's that. Attitude, the heart of the servant, that is at the core of heroism, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Heroes serve. That's what they.
So, wow, you have a big job ahead of you.
Yes.
And you've got to sketch gun.
Yeah. But what's cool is that the narrative has really taken shape. Like, we feel very good about the way that we've metabolized the mythology and kind of brought it into this sort of fresh interpretation while still feeling very kind of authentic to, if anybody knows this sort of the mythology that comes from this, you know, from this area, you're going to be like, they're right in the middle of all that. And yet we're kind of tethering it into this kind of singular narrative. Or really a lot of the actual plot narrative on a big scale.
Gesturing too excitedly, you guys. Oh, you have to step away.
On a big scale, you know, we're following loosely the chronological narrative of like Genesis 6 and then some of the other Genesis plot points, kind of on a wide scale. Episode to episode, not so much, but on a wide scale, yeah.
Yeah, and we're taking everything, again, into a fantasy, you know, place. I mean, like, one of the questions that we always ask whenever we're writing a character or wherever we're writing a part of the world or part of the lore or mythologies, we're always asking ourselves, what's real? What's true? Like, what's the true thing here? And, you know, it's like with characters, you know, when we are going through and are writing a certain bit with the characters, we're always asking ourselves, like, you know, like, how would I respond? Like, how would I feel, you know, this happens, you know, like one of the characters, I don't want to say who gets betrayed, and has to live with that. And like, we kind of come back later and they meet that person that betrayed them. And at first, when we got a first draft in, it was just, they were like, oh, it's great to see you. And it was like, well, no, wait a minute. What happened last time they saw this person?
Yeah, because nobody and wants to watch a film called The Village of the Happy People.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you got 12 village, you know, mega villages and 12 sets of merch to sell.
That's what makes, you know, I think like the best stories have all those human emotions. You have, you know, times of terror, and you have times of joy, and you have times of adventure, and you have times of comedy. And, you know, it's like you get, it's like a roller coaster. That's how good stories, at least in my opinion, good stories should feel like that. I feel like that. I just read Lord of the Rings with my 9-year-old son. And, you know, it's like there's humor, there's action, there's horror at times. There's, you know, there's big plot, there's magic. It's all over the place. It's really fun. And that's something that we're always trying to bring to the story, you know?
Yeah.
And there's so much to draw from. I think Joseph Campbell would have had a field day with this.
I think my late college roommate would have had a field day with this. She was a doctoral candidate in ancient Near Eastern languages, and she did translating the cuneiform for you.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I actually, I did a whole seminar one time on the hero's journey for a creative like lecture series. And I mean, I love it. I think that the hero's journey is just, it's like some of the, you know, it's the best stories. Like, I mean, not to say that every story has to be a hero's journey. It's not true. But I love how creative you can get in that structure. And those stories, in my opinion, are just, they're so satisfying because there's something, as Campbell talks about, there's something that resonates with most people with that structure of storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think a big part of that is that everybody feels at various times in their life that they could use a hero, or that they would need to be the hero in their own life. And to hear stories where this sentiment is echoed, where these pathways are echoed, is a huge thing.
Well, and this is why we still watch Dragon Ball or Superman or Avatar and, you know, get many, you know, thousands of episodes out of it in one way or another. And
Popeye the Sailor.
I think it's what sort of sets us, not totally apart, but in the echelon of narratives that want to put characters in a position where they cling to hope and carry hope in the darkest of times and places. And there's something about in our spirit that we resonate with that. We want to see characters that will not be defeated by the darkness, that no matter how much they get beat down, they continue to hope. They continue to aspire to hope. And I mean, we very much like intentionally made our characters, or at least our core characters, characters who are carriers of hope.
Yeah, and well, and that doesn't mean that they're not flawed either. They're very flawed.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very much a journey and a process and learning. It was you know, one of the things like McKee, you know, who wrote the book Story, you know, I've read that several times, and I think there's a lot of great, it's just, you know, it's genius in a lot of ways. And one of the things that I really like about that, and I think it's very true, is that, you know, you kind of have to beat the hell out of your characters, because everybody in real life gets beaten up. You know, we all get beaten up.
Oh yeah.
And you got to be honest with that, that, you know, there are people, I would say in like my own life, you know, going through like a lot of dark things, and I draw a lot of stuff from my own life, and like realizing there are those moments of just total despair, and that sometimes it takes somebody else pulling you out of that despair to help you see the light again.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, you know, I think like one of the big messages is that no matter how dark it gets, there's still light, and there still is hope. And sometimes you lose sight of that, and you need somebody to help you to see that again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, flaws are okay, right? Like Rocky's a mook, dude. He's flawed, but man, darn it, I freaking root for him because he doesn't give up, right? Mm-hmm. And he is somebody who honestly believes the best in other people all the time. Is he flawed? Yes. Is he kind of a goofy mook? Yes. But dude, I cheer for him, you know, like I can't help it.
Yeah. Go ahead, Al.
Oh, I was going to say, it's like, again, one of the biggest films ever, right? Star Wars and franchises. They're all developing from these characters that are really, you know, flawed. That's the best way to say it. This is what we've been saying. They're flawed characters who develop into somewhat of a, you know, they find that greatness that's within them. It's not readily apparent in the beginning, but as they overcome, they find that greatness in them, and they find how to work with each other and the differences that each other has and the differences that each other bring to the table to overcome their challenges.
You know, and you mentioned Dragon Ball, and I would say that you know, Gabriel is also a little bit inspired by Goku a little bit, just because, you know, sure. Goku has that hope in the midst of darkness, you know, throughout the whole series.
And Goku always believes the best in the person he's against. I mean, he will sacrifice himself if he thinks that he can somehow bring that other person into the light. Goku's an inspiring character.
Say Vegeta, say, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, Goku's a great character. He's like one of the best, right?
Speaking of Goku, we just finished Dragon Ball Z with my kid. I mean, I watched it when I was a kid, teenager, but I just finished it with my 9-year-old and my 12-year-old. We just finished Dragon Ball Z, and now we're moving on to Dragon Ball Super, but they fell in love with it. They are Dragon Ball Z everything. That's all they do. They draw it.
So is it, the manga that you brought them through, or the anime?
No, the show. Yeah, the anime. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, wow. Oh, so, man, you are finding your inspirations from all around you and incorporating it in.
That is true. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my favorite, I think one of my favorite anime series when I think the first anime that I ever saw was the 1980s Vampire Hunter D. I think those are the first one. Mm-hmm. And then I started, got into, you know, Dragon Ball Z and Gundam Wing and, Inuyasha, Yu Yu Hakusho, all those, like, it was like discovered, like, you know, Toonami in the 90s and stuff. And one of my favorite shows of all time is Cowboy Bebop.
Fantastic,
you know, even we draw inspiration from like anywhere. Like there's been moments I've literally given reference to some of the storyboard artists from shots of Cowboy Bebop because I'm just so cool.
That's fantastic. Well, and for a radio station, such a music oriented anime is you know, something dear to our hearts.
The soundtrack is so great.
The Cowboy Bebop music, we've got like 4 CDs worth of music from Cowboy Bebop. They did so much music.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
You know, and I think for me, you know, one of the things that has bled into our show as well would be, you know, for me, Trigun, which in two ways.
Mm. Oh yes,
the Trigun. World of Trigun is this, you know, desert planet. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, they're struggling with having water and food, which is similar to what most of Ara is like. And then Johnny Young Bosch was the voice of Vash the Stampede in the English dub, and he's Gabriel.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask about your cast, and you just walked right into it. Tell us about your cast members. Johnny, of course, has a history.
I was going to say, we have cast members who played characters you may never heard of, like Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah. Those, you've never heard of those guys, right?
No.
Yeah, so Matt Lanter, who played Anakin Skywalker in Clone Wars, he is Nock. And then Christina V, she's played in a lot of different anime, but she's very famous for playing Ladybug in Cat Noir in Miraculous, the Cat Noir Ladybug show.
Uh-huh.
And then she plays Namaya, and then Johnny Young Bosch is Gabriel, and then James Arnold Taylor, who was Obi-Wan Kenobi in Clone Wars, also Johnny Test, and he was Tidus from Final Fantasy X. He is playing our villain.
Wow. This is going to be great.
We have others, too. I mean,
yes, we have others.
Christine Malizia, who has played in several top-tier video games, other shows. We have Vanessa Marshall, yeah. is in there. Which, I can't right now. I'm like, trying to think. Yeah, she's just announced. We have the late great Gabe Petillo. He just passed away, yeah. but he yeah. was in our show season one. And
yeah, so, I hope you got everything you needed out of him.
Hey, 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 hey. And we have a couple
sorry.
Others.
But that stuff happens, you know?
Yeah, he's a great guy. It was very, very sad. This literally just happened like a week and a half ago.
So we're all kind of
still but hit by it. But
For us it was fortunate he played a character that was pretty encapsulated and it's a crazy cast.
Sorry to lose him.
He's a great guy.
He was fantastic, and we were very shocked when we heard about that.
He's a great guy, and we wish we could add more, but we're going to do something special for him in the shows. So
the push continues as you are continuing to seek investors and
continuing to start in June, which is coming soon.
That is the plan. Yeah, we've got some
that is
really
pretty
fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, yes. We've got some big announcements that are going to be coming up. And we're also going to be at GalaxyCon in Raleigh, North Carolina in the end of July, too. So if you're there, we're going to have a panel, and several of our voice actors are going to be there. And
We'll have a table. You can stop by, say hi. And
We were at Richmond, GalaxyCon Richmond, a month or two ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, and... it was a couple weeks ago.
And we did the panel there, and it was phenomenal because we had our entire primary cast, and we did live performance of the show. So we played animatics so people could watch the visuals, and then the voice actors all live performed to the animatics.
Oh, wow.
It was very cool.
And we had a surprise appearance of Gabriel.
Yes.
Our first cosplay.
Yeah.
Yeah. When people start, when someone cosplays your characters, you've made it.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. Awesome. The first episode isn't even done yet, and you've got a cosplayer.
Nope. Yeah.
Nope.
That's fantastic. That's just great.
Yeah, we have, Jason knows better, but we have people who online are doing memes and stuff for us because they just love the show. We get a lot of fan communication online that it's just... As Jason likes to say, it's a rabid fan base. I mean, they're always asking us, when's it coming out? Where can we get merch? Where can we? I mean, it's crazy.
That's what happens when you create a cohesive world, a cohesive, immersive world with an easily identifiable hero in it.
Well, and of course, my marketing weasel mind, you know, when they said there were 12 worlds or 12 trees and 12 civilizations, I'm going, merch. It's 12 different t-shirts, 12 merch. Different, you know, pops, figures.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. We have a cute little cherub lion cub that everyone goes crazy for.
I saw that in the trailer. That looked so cute.
And she is quite the hero in the series too. People are gonna love her in the show.
She's voiced by Christina Malizia. So we have two Christinas, so we have to be careful. Christina V and Christina Malizia, and they both spell their names.
We have three Susans, so I get it.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. I mean, to think about how we don't even have we don't have content out yet. Like, we don't have an actual show or a manga out yet, and we've got a
fan base going.
Man, what is going to happen? That when is they wild. Actually have something to watch.
Yeah.
And that's going to be really important. You know, it probably already has been important, but as you go to get more investors, they're looking at this and going, oh, wow, you've already got some buzz going and you don't even have any product yet.
Show them the memes. That's Show me the memes. I love memes.
It's a great community. They're all fantastic. We love interacting with them when we can. That's why we'd love for people to come out and see us in person. So
We have been extremely blessed with our all the creatives that have come on. It's been a huge blessing. It's been awesome.
It has been.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking to the creators and showrunners of Gabriel and the Guardians on a project in progress. David Cunningham, the executive producer and showrunner, Lisa Tucholsky, assistant story editor, Jason Andrew Moody, the creator and art director, and Al Moore, the executive producer and head of production. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of The Event Horizon, and we are looking forward to seeing what you can pull out of the ether on this. This is going to be fantastic.
We hope so.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Time. Awesome.
Thank you so much, Gene.
Oh, great. You're welcome, Lisa. It was great meeting you at WonderCon, and I've got my fingers crossed for you guys. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be awesome.
We'll make sure and connect again when we have an episode for you guys to watch.
Yes, very much. Sure. I very much hope you do that. And we can have you on again, and you can talk about the show, and we'll do some more.
Yeah, we'd love to come back on when we roll out the show. It'd be great to be
the
story awesome. Continues.
Talk about that.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us. And
thank you, guys.
It's been swell.
Yeah, thank you.
This is fun. Yeah.
You have been listening to episode 272 of Sci-Fi.Radio's production of The Event Horizon for April 26th, 2024. Our guests this evening have been the creative team at Angel Studios, and we have been discussing their big new animation series project, Gabriel and the Guardians. This show will air again tomorrow, April 27th, 2024 at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the following Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all of the air times have passed, you will find this episode and others on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbay FM, Pandora, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. This show will air again tomorrow, April 27th, 2024 at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the following Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all the airtimes have passed, you will find this episode and others on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbay FM, Pandora, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. If you enjoyed the programming you have just heard, please consider visiting patreon.com/sci-fi-radio and become a patron of the station. We are listener-supported sci-fi and fantasy fandom radio, and your contributions go to paying our DJs, our production team, the writers for our Geek News website, our production costs, our business fees, our music licensing, and they help us procure and maintain the equipment and other resources we need to stay on the air. We have been broadcasting continuously since 2009, and we are grateful for the support of listeners just like you. That URL again is patreon.com/sci-fi-radio. The Event Horizon on Sci-Fi Radio. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. This program copyright 2024 by Krypton Media Group.